They fight for food with each other, but it's fun.
Cranes are considered a sacred symbol of longevity and fortune here and designated a national monument. Frank Smith, South Korea.
Snowfall and dropping temperatures have increased the problems of the poor and needy people across Afghanistan. Here, we're visiting some displaced families who face harsh conditions in their camps in Kabul. Bushra Amiri, a mother of 10, is displaced from Helmand province. She says she has nothing to feed her children or heat her simple shack.
I am a widow and have several children. I'm really desperate to feed them and keep them warm. My neighbors used to help us, but now everyone is short of money and food.
Other people in this camp have the same problems. Almost all of them are deprived of their basic needs.
There is no hope for survival. We are left here with no house, no money, and no bread. We are human beings. Why is no one paying attention to us or help us? What should we do in this cold weather, a severe snowfall?
These displaced families hope that the charities and the government could help them to survive the winter. Hundreds of men and women from two camps have come here to enlist them for receiving some aid. Bushra Amiri is happy as she receives some aid in food donated by the WFP and the Gulzad group.
I'm very happy today because I have received some food for my family. My children will have something to eat for next month. We thank charities for their humanitarian aid. However, we need more assistance, including warming clothes and heating.
Afghanistan's financial system has been in a free fall since the Taliban took over, partly due to aid cuts and the freeze of some $10 billion in Afghan assets by the U.S. In addition to dealing with cold weather, most of these families are unable to buy food and medicines. They say it will be very difficult for them to survive this harsh winter if urgent assistance is not provided. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has delivered a speech on the anniversary of an uprising in the Iranian city of Qom on January 9, 1978, against the toppled U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime. The leader reminded the United States of its miscalculations and wrong policies toward the Iranian nation. He pointed to the visit of then-U.S. President Jimmy Carter to Iran several days before the Qom uprising. In that visit, Carter had described the circumstances of Iran under the Pahlavi regime as an island of stability. But later, Ayatollah Khamenei said Carter had to try to quell more uprisings across Iran to prevent the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, a goal he failed to achieve. The leader said the U.S. has made more miscalculations regarding Iran. He added an outstanding example is the 2020 assassination of anti-terror icon Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Since the Islamic Revolution, successive U.S. presidents have left no stone unturned to achieve their anti-Iran ambitions through different means, including military threats and imposition of sanctions. In line with that policy, former U.S. President Donald Trump in 2018 withdrew his country from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA. That's a deal Iran clinched in 2015. Trump imposed tough sanctions on Iran as part of his so-called maximum pressure campaign, a policy incumbent American officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken, have explicitly admitted that has failed. Nonetheless, the current U.S. administration seems to be pursuing the wrong policies of its predecessors toward Iran. One example proving that is the U.S. refusal to remove the anti-Iran sanctions in order to pave the way for reviving the JCPOA that got into trouble because of Washington's withdrawal. Now, it's up to the White House to decide to take a lesson from those wrong policies and reverse course or continue the same anti-Iran agenda.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is the program Viewpoints, and in this series, produced by Brother Mahmoud, we are concerned with an analysis on the thoughts and opinions of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on different occasions and different topics. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, two experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, brother. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. I'm Brother Ali Alavian. Assalamu alaikum, brother. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam and thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome, brother. So, this is the continuation on the series regarding the important topic, pure Muhammadan Islam or Islam and Nabi Muhammadi, based on the speeches of Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. We enumerated some of the features of this type of Islam we are concerned with, and we said that the main cause and goal of the Islamic revolution of Iran to take place was a kind of revival to this concept, Islam and Nabi Muhammadi, or pure Muhammadan Islam. So, according to the leader of Iran, pure Muhammadan Islam is Sayyid Mohsen, is a kind of Islam that is based on the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Prophet Muhammad. It is not a religion of superstition, deviation, extremism, or some of the attributes that are nowadays, unfortunately, in the media, we can say, used as a label for Islam, radical Islam, Islamism. These are the terms that are used nowadays when you are Googling the term Islam, or we can say Islamophobia also, we can say, which is a fear of Islam. When we say Islam and pure Muhammadan Islam based on the Sunnah and the Holy Quran, what do we mean exactly?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Obviously, in order to know about anything, you need to go to the real source. And as we know that the real source of Islam is the holy book Quran, which was revealed on the Prophet, and even all the, we can say, the rulings that are within the Islam, how to deal with the people, how to socialize with the people, how to live a life, it's all been said in the Quran, and Quran is the book of guidance, as it is also said within the Quran. Hudal linnas, this is a book of guidance for the muttaqin and for the mankind. And because this is the last religion or last book that was sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, therefore, if we need to know about Islam, if we need to get knowledge about Islam, or if we need to follow Islam, we need to follow this book. And this is the last book, and obviously it has its own miracles. For example, Allah said, I have sent this down and I am the protector of this book, and this will remain till the judgment day. So because we believe on this, and obviously this is the divine book of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and the last book that was sent by the Prophet, so we need to take the actual Islam from the book itself, from the Quran.
Okay.
In order to understand
when you say taking the Islam, the religion of Islam, from the Holy Quran, so is it clear to all the people around the world? It is the matter of language, the matter of content.
That's what I was.
When we are talking about getting Islam from the Holy Quran, and that book is clear, we know. But the question is that, doesn't it need any interpreter, commentator,
or an alim? It needs. That's what I was going to.
Okay.
That in order to take Islam from the Quran, obviously we need to follow the Sunnah as well. Mm-hmm. The Sunnah of Ahlul Bayt or the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Obviously, the book itself is not something which is can be obviously understood, except there is a teacher. And the best teacher in order to interpret Quran for us is the Ahlul Bayt and the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So therefore we need to refer to two things. One, Quran, and in order to understand the Quran, we need to refer towards the sayings of the Prophet.
That's right.
And Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, as Prophet has mentioned this in his narrations, that I am leaving amongst you two heavy things.
That's right.
The Hadith of Thaqalain, that's what
right.
we know. On top of that, we have even in the Quran, there is a verse, chapter Tawbah, verse number 119, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says to ittaqullah wa kunu ma'as-sadiqin. to be God-weary, to do not disobey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which means to follow the Quran, and be with the truthful people.
Okay.
These truthful people are Ahlul Bayt and the Prophet himself.
Yes.
Obviously, the Prophet who got this Quran, the revelation was on the Prophet, he could better explain us what does this Quran says. For example, in the Quran we have generally, it says Aqimus Salat, establish the prayer. But how to pray is been said by the Prophet. For example, it says jahadu, to struggle.
That's right.
This struggle, it has two meanings. Number one, to have self-washing. For example, your own actions and deeds, which is the major jihad in the hadith.
Yes.
And there's a minor jihad, which is obviously fighting against the enemies or protecting yourself, country with the sword.
Okay.
So these things, obviously the details are said in the narrations of the Prophet.
Okay.
That's why Supreme Leader is referring to take the Islam from its original source.
Original source.
And you know the letter that he wrote to the youth of the West,
that's right.
In that he mentioned, do not take Islam from these interpreters that are today, or they're telling you about the Islam. For example,
media.
The media,
that's right.
The term we have like American Islam or Britisher Muslims and all those.
Yes.
Take it from original source. And the original source is the Quran and the Sunnah.
Brother Ali, a lack of the knowledge of the Holy Quran among the Muslims is another topic. That's why maybe it causes the people and the Muslims especially to be day by day away from the true teachings of the Holy Quran and knowing Islam through that. Where is the problem, do you think?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam Muhammad and his purified progeny. When we talk about the Islam of Kitab, Islam of Quran, and Islam of Sunnah, the household of the Prophet, for some may come to their mind that, okay, what is the Islam that we are following? This is the Islam that we are following exactly. We have the book. We're following the book. We are the real followers of Sunnah. So even sometimes they target ourselves, they target us as you need to follow Quran and the Sunnah. You are actually not in the way of Quran and Sunnah. So what do we mean by this Quran and Sunnah? Yes, all of us, all of we Muslims have Quran, and we think that we are following it. But Quran, which is being interpreted by the Ahlul Bayt, the household of the Prophet, by the Prophet himself first, what is this Quran? What is this Islam? The Islam that in its interpretation of Quran, it asks you to stand in front of oppressors. Do not leave your principles and do support your principles. Are we really doing that? I mean, are we following the Quran in this way? Are we looking at the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet in such a way?
Okay.
Is the Sunnah that we are claiming to be the follower of it, lets us to stay silent while Muslims are being killed and massacred in different parts of the world and their rights are violated? So when we are saying that the Islam of pondering, the Islam of thinking, the Islam of Sunnah, in looking at the Sunnah in this way.
The term Sunnah itself is very controversial among the Muslims.
Yeah.
I mean, among the Ahl al-Sunnah, they call themselves the follower of the Sunnah.
Yes.
And from this time...
And they also exclude
the
some of the Shias from the to be the followers of the Sunnah.
Let's clarify this a little bit. The Holy Quran is a little bit clear for us. You know, there is a text over there, reading out of it, following its true teachings, or as Sayyid said, refer to the truthful teachers of the Quran, which are the Ahlul Bayt and then the Ulama. But what about the Sunnah itself? How we can have a clear understanding of what Sunnah is?
Look, we also take our Islam from some sources, two of which are Quran and Sunnah.
Okay.
The book is quite clear, but are we really able to extract Islamic principles from the book by ourselves? So it requires to have an interpreter. Who are these interpreters? There is a difference between some Muslim sects that they say that we ourselves are able to interpret Quran in the way that we understand it. But we say no, Quran has a good interpreter, and they are the Ahlul Bayt of the Prophet.
Okay.
In addition to the conduct and seerah of the Ahlul Bayt, that we take it from their behavior, their the way that they lived with people in societies, the way that they looked at Quran, also actually this is what talks to us.
This is what Sunnah means?
This the Sunnah is, if we want to actually detach Sunnah from, I mean, to talk about Sunnah in itself, Sunnah is the seerah, the conduct of the Holy Prophet and his followers, and his the Holy Prophet and his successors, that is 12 Imams.
Okay.
Sunnah and seerah are two different things.
Okay.
And in the definition of Sunnah, basically, our Sunni brothers, they have a definition. They say, for example, the actions of the Prophet, the sayings of the Prophet, Ahlul Bayt, Ashab, companions, Tabi'een, who were like
followers
of the companions, and Taba Tabi'een.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these five things in their definition. Like in our Ahlul Sunnah brother, they say Sunnah to the actions and the sayings and the, you can say, like the things that have been conveyed through the history, that have been come through the history to them, which relates to these five people, like the Prophet, Ahlul Bayt, Ashab, for example, the close companions, Tabir and Taba Tabi'in. For them, these are the authorities as a Sunnah.
Okay.
Whereas in Shia school of thought, we say the Sunnah is of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt only. Even if there is a companion, we refer it back towards the Prophet.
Yes.
But there, in their category, in their definition, they say even if a Taba Tabi'in or Tabi has said something, he has definitely, it's in their principles of jurisprudence.
Okay.
It is written there that if he has said something, it is definitely he has taken it from the Prophet. They don't go after the verification whether he has got it from the right source or not.
Okay.
Whereas in Shia school of thought, no, we follow the basically verification.
That's right.
That he has taken it rightly from there.
Very
so
good.
This is a basic difference. And that's why we see difference in the different school of thoughts then within the Islam.
Right.
For example, if Shias, we can say if the Shias are 12 imam, 12 verse. If there are 12 verse, Ithna Ashari, for example, their maraji or their scholars, who give fatwa, is all based on the sayings of the Ma'sumin, and they're very close to each other.
Yes, sir. Okay.
In the other school of thoughts, we see differences. It's because of the same reason that they follow five things.
And Sayyid Mohsen and Brother Ali Alevi, this is my question for both of you. Does this difference of opinions keep us away from the Islam and Nabi Muhammadi?
Well, obviously.
Or no, does it help us to reach to Islam and Nabi Muhammadi based on agreement, based on thought and analysis? And this is what the Ahlul Bayt was looking after or not?
Differences on what?
Differences on opinions on
between
these different schools of thoughts. For example, now we have, because Rahbar says that based on Islam and Sunnah, now we have this difference of opinion on the Sunnah itself, okay?
And the
definition of the Sunnah. Does these disagreements make us help to reach pure Muhammadan Islam?
Obviously, it is making a difference.
Okay.
And it's taking us far from the actual Islam. And that's why the Supreme Leader, being the leader of the Muslim Ummah, is talking to every single Muslim. Refer back to the Islam and Sunnah. And what he means by Sunnah is the following the Sunnah or the traditions or the sayings of the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt.
Okay.
And leaving the last three categories that are mentioned by them.
That's right.
Because in his speeches, he talks about the Sunnah. The Sunnah is the Sunnah of the Prophet or the Ahlul Bayt.
That's right.
And the Islam that has come to us through the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, obviously, you know, we have this book, there are the six books of traditions near our brother, Ahl Sunnah brothers, which is Sahih Sitta, Bukhari and Muslim and Tirmizi and the other books. Even in them, if we see, for example, if you look at the chapter of Salat, the chapter of, for example, Hajj, the chapter of Saum, most of the narrations are been narrated by Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam.
Okay.
It's from Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
Even they accept it. So what Rahbar is referring to is, let's go back to the point where we are basically sharing the same
to the original
ideas, to the original Islam.
Okay.
For example, if the Shia Muslims are agreed on the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, and Ahl Sunnah also refer to these two sources on the first basis. So let's go to those first bases, and then we can have the pure Islam. We can go back to the pure Islam. Even with the differences that we have, the small differences that we have, we can have the unity, because Ahlul Bayt in their seerah, in their practical life, the way they live. Now, the difference of Sunnah and Sirah comes here.
Yes.
The life that they have, the actions, the reactions that they have, even in that life, we can see this unity.
We have to get back to the original Islam based on studying, and this is what I think the Muslim community and the Muslim youth nowadays lack. Because if we do not have true understanding through studying the Holy Quran, history of Islam and the Sunnah, then the selective, we can say, understanding of the Islam can get into what Sayyid called the British Islam or the American Islam and not the pure Muhammadan Islam.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Brother Ali Alavian.
Thanks, you.
And Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, it was very kind of you. I really benefited from your discussion. And I hope that our dear listeners benefited from this series of the discussions and analysis on the thoughts and some of the most outstanding opinions of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Visit our website, parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also our YouTube page, Call of Islam Radio. We bid farewell to you. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Sometimes I can't see where I'm supposed to go. Sometimes I speed up when I should take it slow. But through all my hard times, when I lose my way, you're concealing my mistakes. Yeah, I know you're always by my side, never turning out your light. When I need you most, your stars will shine. When I'm out there in the darkest place, worn and tired, I can still see you illuminate all my skies. When it feels like I've fallen too far from you, there you are, guiding me through. Whenever I feel down, you can lift me up, turning my life around with your love. No matter how rough it gets, I can wear a smile, 'cause your mercy never dries. Yeah.
In the limelight.
American protesters gathered in Fayetteville, North Carolina for a second night in a row on Monday, 10th of January, after a black man was killed by an off-duty sheriff's deputy. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Maya Yang. The piece is titled, Fatal Shooting of Black Man by Off-Duty Officers Sparks Protests in North Carolina. American protesters gathered in Fayetteville, North Carolina for a second night in a row on Monday, 10th of January, after a black man was killed by an off-duty sheriff's deputy. The Fayetteville Police Department identified the man killed on Saturday as Jason Walker, a 37-year-old black man who the deputy told authorities jumped onto his vehicle. The Cumberland County Sheriff's Office identified the deputy as Jeffrey Hash. In a statement, Fayetteville police said a preliminary investigation revealed that Jason Walker ran into traffic and jumped on the moving vehicle. The driver of the vehicle shot Jason Walker and notified 911, it said. Jeffrey Hash, who has been with the Cumberland County Sheriff Department since 2005, was taken into custody but not arrested. On Monday, he was put on administrative leave, pending an internal investigation. By Tuesday, 11th of January, no charges had been filed. The Fayetteville Police Chief, Gina Hawkins, said data obtained from the black box of Jeffrey Hash's truck revealed that the vehicle did not impact anything or anyone. but a windshield wiper was torn off and used to break the windshield. Gina Hawkins said the weapon used by Sheriff's deputy, Jeffrey Hash, was not his service weapon. She did not disclose how many shots were fired or where Jason Walker was hit. Gina Hawkins asked the North Carolina Bureau of Investigation to take the lead in the investigation. Demonstrators challenged the police version of events, gathering outside the Fayetteville Transit Authority and chanting, "What do we want? Justice. When do we want it? Now." Elizabeth Riggs, a trauma nurse, told WREL News she was on the scene and tried to save Jason Walker's life. "I did not see anyone in distress. The man was just walking home," she said. "It breaks my heart he didn't survive, and I'm trying to cope with that as well. I don't want to take away from Jason or the injustice, and I'm not going to be silent." A cousin of Jason Walker told WREL News the police chief's description of events did not sound like something Jason Walker would do. "We're hearing one side of the story that sounds like a person that Jason is not, and then on the other side we're hearing a story that makes complete sense," said the cousin, who was not identified by name. "We have to take it one day at a time. Hopefully the system does what is right and gets to the bottom of this. We really just want justice for Jason." According to Jason Walker's family, he was a single father and left behind a young son. On Tuesday, the prominent civil rights attorney, Ben Crump, said he would represent Walker's family. Ben Crump, who represented the family of George Floyd after he was killed by former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin in May of 2020, disputed the police account of Jason Walker's death. At the crux of the matter, Was Mr. Walker shot in the back as he tried to return home? His parents lived across the street, less than 100 yards away, Ben Crump said on Twitter. "We stand committed with the family and the young son that Jason Walker has left behind to find answers as to what happened to him when he was senselessly shot and killed by an off-duty deputy, Jeffrey Hash."
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
زيارة of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim عليه السلام.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى بن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kadhim عليه السلام.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners. I'm your host, Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam. As you well know, dear listeners, Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. We find in the history books that Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam was intentionally arrested and he was thrown into dark prisons where he remained for many years. We also find in the history books that Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam was put under some of the most severest of tortures, and they made him suffer from pain and misfortunes. But the beauty and the behaviors and the akhlaq, the morals and ethics, and this perseverance and patience and steadfastness of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam resulted in that despite these trials and tribulations and tortures and imprisonment and pains and misfortunes and sufferings, Imam al-Kadhim never grumbled, nor did he complain, nor did he whine, nor did he show any impatience towards all that befell upon him. And rather, Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam showed gratitude to Allah. He praised and worshipped Allah more than even the people who weren't facing all of these different calamities and tragedies. We find that Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam thanked and praised Allah for giving him the time and the dedication to serve and obey Allah. These are the dialogues of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام إذا كان الجور أغلب من الحق لم يحل لأحد أن يظن بأحد خيرا حتى يعرف ذلك منه.
Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, at a time when injustice is more prevalent than good, it is not permitted for anyone to entertain good opinions about another, unless he knows him to be such.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. In the conversations and the dialogues of Imam
Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kadhim alayhi salam, we find that Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam really encouraged and urged the Muslims to obtain an understanding and to obtain the knowledge of Islam. It's interesting, but when we look at the seerah and the sunnah, the manners and the ways of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, we also see that his esteemed father, the sixth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, also encouraged the attainment of the knowledge of Islam, to the extent where it is said that he had one of the largest, if not the largest, Islamic university when looked at within its own framework. He had the largest Islamic seminary, this largest Islamic university, with well over 4,000 students from all across the world. Now, in continuation to the seerah and the sunnah and these manners of the Ahlul Bayt, we find that Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, in his conversations and his dialogues, he also highly encourages Muslims to seek knowledge, to obtain knowledge, and to have a good understanding of the religion of Islam. To a certain point where Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam has even said in another one of his conversations that a deed which is conducted without the obtainment or the understanding of Islam does not please the mighty, the all-exalted Allah. Now, along these lines, we find that a companion of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam asks him about the religious precepts that he needs to know, that he must know, these religious precepts, these ahkam, these religious laws which must be followed by every single individual. So this companion asks him in this conversation, what are these religious precepts that a person really needs? The man asked, can men leave the question about what they need? In this case, we're talking about the ahkam, the religious laws and the religious precepts. Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam replied to the person and said, men cannot leave what they need in the respect of the affairs of their religion. It's very interesting because the man does not ask a specific question. He gives kind of a general question where he says, can men really leave the question about what they need, you know? So that need could have been interpreted in many ways by many people. But here, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, he makes this question of the individual more specific and more precise by making his answer more specific and more precise. Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam says, men cannot leave what they need, not in just any respect, no. They cannot leave what they need in the respect of the affairs of their religion. And so here we find the importance, again, of knowing the affairs of the religion, knowing the precepts of the religion, and knowing the religion itself, because it is something that we cannot leave, and it is something that we need. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim, alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program Dialogue. I'm Attar, the producer of this program, and at this moment I want you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Abbas Mirza about Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
There's a very nice hadith which comes from the Imam and says that Hazrat Adam was offered three things. Hazrat Adam was offered aql, Hazrat Adam was offered deen, Hazrat Adam was offered haya, you know, shame, modesty. So Hazrat Adam chose aql. He did not choose religion, or he did not choose haya, because it was the best choice. When you choose aql, right, the deen comes with it, and also haya, modesty, shame also comes with it. That's why there's a nice aqlun nas, the most intellectual individuals, Amirul Mu'mineen, are those who have haya. So that means intellectual person will have modesty, will have haya, will have shame. Unfortunately today, when we look around, we live in a very shameless society. There is no haya, there is no modesty in this modern civilization, right? So what this points out to, that this modern civilization lack in their intellectuality, because it is an indication. A modest person will be an intellectual person. So if a person is not modest, then he is not intellectual. He does not have aql. The sign of intellectuality is manifested, is reflected through modesty of a person.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
A kingdom of ice and snow. Don't be surprised. It's an international sculpture festival held annually in the Chinese city of Harbin. This year, the venue brims with sports elements in a runner-up to the 2022 Winter Olympics scheduled in Beijing. The annual Winter Festival is the largest of its kind, where sculptors spend weeks using ice and snow to create structures under a given theme. The upcoming Winter Games is the theme this year, as one can visualize giant statues of Bing Duan Duan. The adorable panda mascots are major attractions of the exhibition. The chief designer says an ice tower standing in the center of the park features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics.
In terms of the design concept, the sculpture features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics to be held in Beijing. The spiral array form also indicated the proactive spirit of the Olympics. The free and upward effect is a vivid presentation of the Olympic flame.
The annual festival, which is being held for about 3 decades, usually attracts domestic and foreign tourists. But COVID-19 restrictions have limited the crowds over the past couple of years. Harbin is located in northeast China and receives cold winter wind from Siberia. An average winter temperature there is around minus 17 degrees Celsius.
South Koreans enjoy a wildlife refuge near the Korean Demilitarized Zone. New tours opened in November from the DMZ Crane Peace Town. Frank Smith has more in this report.
A new hiking trail and birdwatching facility opened up in South Korea this past November. DMZ Crane Peace Town created special birding cabins and guides wilderness hikes north of the 38th parallel, near the DMZ, the fortified border with North Korea. The Demilitarized Zone was created with the armistice that ended the Korean War back in 1953. guard post fencing, and a 2 to 4 kilometer wide buffer zone now separate North Korea and South Korea, with that no man's land becoming home to rejuvenated plant and wildlife.
Local officials see wildlife tourism as an opportunity to promote inter-Korean peace.
Cranes know no borders. That's why we're promoting the crane as a symbol of peace, as they can freely come and go between North and South Korea.
Each winter, several species of birds, especially cranes, spend time to rest and feed in the area, where there's little development and few people. Officials say more birds have been coming here because of depleted feeding grounds in the north.
Chirwan has wide plains suitable for growing rice. Cranes eat the grain that has fallen after harvest, and it's the best place for cranes because it's located north of the civilian control line.
A safe vantage point to photograph the wildlife is provided at the Hantan River near Yangji Village, attracting birders from far afield.
I left home at 4 in the morning to come here to photograph wild birds, swans and cranes. It's good because there are many mallard ducks and other birds. They fight for food with each other, but it's fun.
Cranes are considered a sacred symbol of longevity and fortune here and designated a national monument. Frank Smith, Chirwan County, South Korea.
Thirty-three lucky green sea turtles get a new lease on life in Indonesia. The turtles were released into the sea off the coast of the island of Bali. Tourists and locals gathered to watch the endangered animals get their way back to the wild. Authorities rescued the reptiles from poachers late last year. The population of green sea turtles has fell sharply in recent years due to excessive hunting and the loss of nesting sites. In Chile, three Andean condors are back in the wild after years of rehab at a rescue center. The vulnerable vultures were released near the Chilean capital, Santiago. Scientists will continue to monitor the birds to make sure they are healthy. Andean condors occupy a special place in Chile. They are, in fact, the country's national bird and a symbol of power and health. The vultures are one of the biggest flight-capable birds in the world, with a wingspan of up to 3.2 meters. Conservationists in several countries are trying to shore up their population.
In Germany, tasty bits of crumbs are all it takes for hundreds of sheep and goats to participate in the campaign to encourage vaccination against COVID-19. 700 farm animals were arranged into a 100-meter-long syringe in a pasture south of Hamburg. The shepherd says she spent several days practicing the herd. The sheep and goats were lured by pieces of bread, which they quickly gobbled up after being released into the field. Helping the shepherd was an organizer who works with a flock to run team training exercises for companies. He says they wanted to do something to grab people's attention and encourage them to get COVID jabs.
Well, if I were to just run it on Facebook, nobody would notice it. And my job is to have company teams leading some thousand sheep from A to B, and I have noticed how enthusiastically the sheep are received, and that it simply reaches people deep inside, which is perhaps not possible rationally with rational arguments.
Etzold says sheep bring out the soft side of people and hopes that this will help convey the message. So far, the campaign has received a positive response, with videos of the sheep arrangement going viral. Official data shows Germany has the lowest inoculation rate among Western European nations. This is mainly attributed to vaccination hesitancy, as well as a small percentage who vehemently oppose getting the jab.
technological change is accelerating today with robots and artificial intelligence making fast inroads into human lives. A consumer electronics show in Las Vegas is the latest example of the same. From lifelike baby dolls to full-grown human-like robots are on the display. They not only write, cry, laugh, and blink, but some of them speak and react when you tell them something. The most interesting thing about these robots is their reactions, which are just like humans, seeming as if they are real people. The robot makers say soon people will not be scared of these human-faced machines being among them.
Humans are so complex, so making a robot exactly like a human is almost impossible. If we did that, then you wouldn't be scared of it because you'd just assume it's a human. But you get that uncanny valley just before where it doesn't quite move like a human, doesn't quite express itself or emote or talk like a human. And that's the uncanny valley. That's the scary bit. If you go further back to something that looks less like a human, then suddenly you like it a lot more.
The robot makers hope that the way these robots are made would help even doctors how to treat and conform children, for instance. They also hope that by adding more human characteristics to these robots, the machines will be at the service of humans more than before.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Let's see what's happening in one of the world's oldest festivals. It's called Black and White Carnival, celebrated every year in the Colombian city of Pasto. But it has a lot more than what its name may suggest. The carnival, full of vibrant colors and fun, livens up when people perform music too. Those in attendance even threw talcum powder and foam to add more doses of joy. More things to visit too. Colorful monuments and floats are brought to the streets. An artisan explains what's behind one of the huge sculptures exhibited there.
This commemorates what we are going through right now in the world. The virus, that little thing that brought COVID. We have skulls, people who died, those who are reborn, children, old people, and a lady. That's the whole motif. It's called rebirth.
The event has roots in Spanish and African traditions related to the indigenous people of Colombia. The carnival is aimed at highlighting the diversity of ethnic and cultural backgrounds. Its name symbolizes unity and equality. The festival continues until January the 10th. A zoo in the Netherlands is celebrating the birth of a newborn manatee, a rare event among the endangered species, especially within the confines of captivity. The newcomer was born in a Royal Burger Zoo in a Dutch city of Arnhem. Zookeepers say the birth went smoothly, adding that this is the mother's second calf. The newborn is still too young for keepers to be able to determine its gender, but handlers hope it will be a female. That's because there are only 15 females in European zoos. Manatees are closely related to elephants and are sometimes called sea cows because of their herbivorous diet. These gentle giants are listed as vulnerable to extinction, mainly because of loss of habitat and collisions with boats. Shanghai is one of the most famous cities in the world, boasting an impressive number of tourist attractions. Now, the city is host to a new event that could draw excited visitors. The exhibition includes more than 100 items from Egypt, including 6 golden mummies. The most prized object on display is a 20-year-old female mummy with a gold mask and two jewels for eyes. Organizers have also put up for show original works by great European artists such as Raphael and Pablo Picasso.
Chinese astronauts on board the space station have held a unique conference with students, sending them a message that sky is the limit. They hope to inspire students to pursue their dreams and be proactive about their goals. Let's have a listen.
Every one of us went through rigorous selection and arduous training before carrying out space missions. Many people have to wait for several years, dozens of years, and even a whole life. But what deserves praise is that we have never given up, but remained true to our original aspiration, stood the loneliness, and passed the tests.
Ye, who is a first-time space traveler, also encouraged students to be brave in following their dreams. The Chinese astronauts talked about their life, work, and personal experiences. Students from Beijing, Hong Kong, and Macau were given the rare chance to ask their own questions during the Ground Space Conference. China launched Shenzhou 13 into space in October last year. The astronauts are scheduled to stay in orbit for 6 months, which will be the country's longest ever crewed mission.
The mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital, Kabul, to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
Definitely, we want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now they're happy that once again they can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack library.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months, it didn't come and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmax for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games, and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign starts as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
IRIB English Radio.